WGBW Denmark, Green Bay's real news and great conversation, a civic media radio station.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. President Trump rejected an Israeli plan in recent days to kill Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, say two U.S. officials to ABC News. When asked about the story, first reported by Reuters, Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu would not say anything about it. More air attacks between Israel and Iran for a third day. 15% of the Iranian missiles are getting through Israeli-U.S. air defenses, says Israelis. Ambassador to the U.S. Reaction from retired U.S. General Joseph Votel.
Iran is counting on that and hoping that that will put pressure on the Israeli administration to stop doing what they're doing.
Law enforcement officers searching an area in Sibley County outside Minneapolis for the suspected shooter of Minnesota lawmakers. Sources say they found a vehicle and personal items that may be connected. One person's dead, at least 11 others wounded by gunfire in a neighborhood overnight, say police in Elkhart, Indiana. This is ABC News. A jury in Karen Reed's murder retrial goes back into deliberations tomorrow. Reed's charged with killing her Boston police officer boyfriend in 2022 by hitting him with her car and leaving him to die in a blizzard. The first trial ending in a hung jury. ABC News legal contributor Brian Buckmeyer.
For the Commonwealth, their strongest argument looks at the motivation as they perceive it. The video that we saw where Karen Reed and John O'Keefe might have been arguing with each other, some of the interviews that Karen Reed actually gave after the first trial, as well as some of the evidence that points to some of the rearview mirror shards being found in John O'Keefe's body. But the defense has a very strong argument of that there being no evidence of an actual collision, and that would make Karen Reed not guilty outright.
Our Brian Buckmeyer. Tomorrow, testimony is scheduled to continue in the Sean Diddy Combs sex trafficking and racketeering trial in federal court in New York. One issue is whether a juror lied to get on the panel. Chuck Sievertson, ABC News.
Matt Nair on air.
State Representative Christian Phelps.
As somebody who's in my first term in the legislature, one of the striking things is how seldom the majority party speaks with us. I don't know how many of my colleagues personally feel LGBTQ people don't deserve freedom, but that's kind of irrelevant at the end of the day. They've already spent a number of days attacking trans people because those are days they don't have to spend defending their very unpopular economic agenda.
Matt Nair on air. Weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local civic media radio station and on the app.
For 75 years, the Muscular Dystrophy Association's voices have thundered through the halls of Congress.
For 75 years, we've willed the impossible into existence.
For 75 years, the MDA community has pushed the science,
shifted the narrative,
and established the field of neuromuscular medicine.
And until that day when this is all a thing of the past,
you couldn't stop us if you tried.
Join us and celebrate 75 years of breakthroughs at MDA75.org.
This is your local civic media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Sholly Pittman. A new study highlights the high price of incarceration and says the annual total cost to families of Americans behind bars is nearly $350 billion. Judith Ruiz Branch reports.
A new study highlights the high price of incarceration and says the annual total cost to families of Americans behind bars is nearly $350 billion. The study from Fora.us says one in two American adults has seen incarceration in their immediate family, with higher rates among Black Americans. Families with a member in jail or prison spend about $4,000 a year, and the report says for Black families, the cost is more than double due to longer sentencing. Zoe Towns with Fora.us says expenses like phone calls, care packages, long-distance travel, and new costs at home all contribute to the exorbitant price.
It also includes depressed wages over the lifetime of the person who's incarcerated, who's no longer able to contribute, but also to all the other members of the family. Oftentimes are also now experiencing lower pay just because of all of the shock of incarceration and the disruption that comes with that.
She adds the children of people behind bars usually see their own wages depressed throughout their lifetime, time even after a parent is released. Wisconsin's incarceration rate is among the highest in the nation. Black Wisconsinites are locked up at a rate nearly 12 times higher than whites, despite making up just 6% of the state's population. The report shows incarceration rates are also higher for people in poverty, with subsequent expenses eating up more than a quarter of the family income. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
For Civic Media News, I'm Sholly Pittman.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price on this Father's Day. Plentiful cloud cover out there with showers here and there and even some rumbles of thunder too. High temperatures warming to the lower 70s. Our winds on the light side. Tonight, showers and storms, mostly cloudy skies, lows in the lower 60s. Currently 62 degrees.
Maggie Dawn.
At 4 o'clock, I'm joined by Matt Rothschild. We go deep on book banning in Florida. Did you read Judy Blume? Did you like it? Well, Florida kids won't be able to read it anymore. We discuss.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
Tom Hartman here. You're listening to 97.9 WGBW.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
I'm your host, Dr. Kristen Lierley, and we have a fun show today. We do because my guest is the host of Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. His name is Pete Schwabba.
What are the odds?
I know.
Are we on camera?
We are.
Okay. I didn't know. It wasn't coming up at first, and I was like...
You're not used to sitting in that seat either.
No,
it's
not.
A different view.
This is not my good side, so if you don't mind changing, that would be...
I'm the boss
now. I don't
now.
Have a good side. So.
I'm the boss, and we are flipping the script, and does that make you feel uncomfortable?
That's interesting, because when I'm the host, I like to make the field guest feel welcome, and I would probably willingly give up my seat if they felt self-conscious, but no, of course. It's great to be here. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me on your show so many times. I always have so much fun with you.
I get a lot of bang for my buck when Dr. Kristen Lierley is on the show. You're just so much fun. You could talk about anything. Uh-huh. You love to talk about anything.
Mm-hmm. We had a great promo on lube that we then couldn't put out there because it was a little too spicy.
Apparently. I didn't think it was that bad. I mean, it's just, whatever. Who knows? Yeah. I'm not.
This is a problem, though. Okay, so you have a history of being a stand-up comic. So you clearly, you have boundary issues.
Meaning I won't go certain places?
You can approach, you know that there are boundaries and you can't go there. Because you have been there in a different audience, in a different environment, right?
Yeah.
And I'm a gynecologist, so I also have boundary issues. So then you put the two of us together and we're like feeling around in the dark trying to look for
that's
that
line. That's a bad analogy. I assume whenever you do your job, things are very well lit. A comedy club, on the other hand, can be a little dimly lit and you can get yourself in more trouble if you just put your hands out there. But no, I worked fairly clean when I was a comedian. Not always, but I wasn't afraid to go somewhere if it happened that way. Mm-hmm. But I didn't make a point to try to be dirty or edgy or controversial or anything. I just always wanted to be funny.
That wasn't part of your shtick.
No, but sometimes it would come up when you're on stage and the crowd takes you there, whether you want to go or not, depending on the crowd. Sometimes you have to, I did a joke one time in Florida when the opening to the joke was, I'm Catholic and I got booed and I'm 23 and I was working the road. It was the time of my life. I couldn't believe I was doing this.
Had you been down to that part of the country before? Yeah. So
I
it's different. Like we're used to everybody being Catholic up here.
At least
like there are a lot of us. That is unusual.
Everywhere I had gone up until that point, 16 years of Catholic school, and where I lived in Chicago and then where I lived up here in Northeast Wisconsin was all Catholic. So I opened the joke saying, I'm Catholic, and I got booed.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, what are you guys? You know, and some woman goes, we're Christian.
Uh-huh.
And I said, Catholics are Christians, you dumb.
Oh.
F. That's not a woman word. Just a basic insult because I was so annoyed with the crowd at that point. And I'm like, how do you not know that?
And you're talking about religion and you dropped an F-bomb.
I dropped an F-bomb. So that one, and I was 23, and I was like, oh, God, I hope they book me back. You know, in the back of my head, I was scared after I said it, but I just went with it. And it felt right in the moment, Kristen.
Uh-huh. Did they book you back?
They did.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were great. It was a...
That's the thing about comedy, though, because you never know what the thing is that's going to actually, like, rise, that's going to be popular. Yeah. You're taking a chance, and it could go either way.
Yeah, it could. And if you, I think if you do things confidently... The crowd will stay with you. And this is, look, I was a comedian for like 8 years, not that long.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't want to talk like I'm the authority, but that was my that was my experience. And then I segued into comedy writing. I mean, my whole career has kind of been comedy, but it was, I think if you have confidence, like I remember in Pittsburgh, I opened up for Chris Rock and, you know, it was the first time the crowd was all black.
Uh-huh.
And I am the whitest guy ever.
Yes, you are.
And, what do you mean by that?
I am looking at you.
I'm very fair skin. I'm not very necessarily exotic or hip or anything. And I was a little intimidated and it didn't go well. The first show.
Because you weren't confident.
Well, I just didn't know what to expect. Yeah. And yeah. Part of it was I was intimidated by Chris Rock.
Well, no kidding.
I knew he was watching. And so anyway, I did the first show and I was nervous and I got heckled by like a 14-year-old boy who said words I wouldn't say as an adult. I was like, oh, my God, his parents are right there laughing with him. So by the second show, I learned very quickly that it doesn't matter who the crowd is or mm-hmm. how different they are than you perceptibly. You know, you just have to have confidence. And if you say things like that, and if you're not afraid to insult people, they'll be with you. As twisted and weird as that sounds.
I think it's true, though, yeah. Regardless of the environment where you are. If you are different.
Yeah.
People can smell blood.
Oh, absolutely they can.
And when you're trying to entertain yes. them, that can be tough.
And when you are trying to get their approval, you come across as very needy.
Mm.
And that's a situation where people can pounce. Mm-hmm. Whether you're in West Palm Beach with a bunch of Southerners or any kind of crowd, you know.
So let's back up a little bit.
Yeah.
You're born in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And then you moved to Marinette, Wisconsin as a junior high kid.
Yeah.
How was that for you?
Really rough.
I'm sure.
You know, I mean, at that age, it's hard to move. Oh, it's hard to move at any age. I'm not, you know, but.
But that's a really hard age to move. And then to move from one of the biggest cities in the country to a very small town where most of the people who live there, like I grew up in Kaukauna, my parents went to school with my friend's parents. Like it's generations of people who have lived there.
Right. Yeah, it was strange. Mostly, at first, it was just kind of a, you know, at first we got up here in the summer to Marinette, and there was a place called The Dome, and our house wasn't ready. So we stayed in this cottage on the water for the first month.
Mm.
And my parents took us to school and pick us up because we didn't know where we were going. And it was just like vacation. And then we moved into our house. But the first day of school, my mom didn't know, we didn't know anything. So she takes me to get a haircut. I have the worst Jim Carrey and Dumb and Dumber haircut. And I had plaid pants on. It's like she was trying to get me beat up or test me. You know what I mean? So
I just want to make a note that when you came into the studio today, you told me that you gave yourself your own haircut.
I did.
And it looks good.
It doesn't look good, but it looks better than the haircut I had. It was really terrible. But everybody was really nice. You know, we had great neighbors. And, you know, the people we've met in Marinette are still our best friends. And I live there now. So I never thought I would as an adult, but it just seemed like, you know, the right thing at the right time. And so it worked out really well. I met my wife there. But it was a hard move at first, you know, and I loved Chicago. I was aware of what a great city I lived in. You know, I used to read encyclopedias about cities and all kinds of fun stuff. So it was hard to move, but I loved Wisconsin. You know, we vacationed in like Eagle River and Three Lakes.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, we're closer. But it was a different world for sure.
Yeah. It's funny how it sucks you back in. Like, I remember being in high school in Kaukauna and thinking, I cannot wait to get out of this dead little small town.
Yeah.
And here I am living 20 minutes up the street.
Isn't that something? I know.
And I love it. I love my hometown now. I know it doesn't smell good. You don't have to tell me that. But, you know, it smells like home to me.
It must smell better when you get off the freeway or when you get off the highway, though, right? Is that just a 41 smell?
No. No, if you go down by the mill, it's thick. On a humid day.
Really?
And
you just get used to it?
You get used to it, and it's better than it used to be.
Okay.
Yeah. But because
the one, you know, when I used to do stand-up or whenever I drive to Michigan, you have to go through I don't know if it's actually Gary or Hammond proper,
yeah.
but there's a there's a stretch down there that smells horrible. And I equate it. It's whatever it is, they must make the same thing they make in Kaukauna because it's the same type of smell.
I don't know. I bet I could tell the difference.
Yeah, you probably could. You're nuanced.
Hey, we're talking with Pete Schwabba from Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. And he's got this incredible background. I mean, grew up in Chicago, moved to Marinette, but then went back to Chicago for school and started doing stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
And here's my question.
Yeah.
You were young when you started stand-up. Was it really because you were... You didn't like feet?
Wait a minute. What's the feet thing? Oh, was that from the movie?
It was from the movie.
Oh, wow. That was a made-up thing. No, I had no problem with feet. That was just something I wrote for that character. No, I just grew up watching Evening at the Improv and those shows that were on A&E. And I remember one night in particular, I was sitting in Marinette in our family room and I was a couple comics, maybe Robin Williams was one of them before
Genius.
He was really Robin Williams. And they were hanging out outside the Improv on Melrose, just talking. I was like, man, that looks fun. And, you know, and then I did a contest in college and I got the guts to try it in college. So I was young and I got lucky in a sense that there was a comedy boom happening when I was about 21.
In Chicago.
Everywhere, really. Stand-up was just becoming like mainstream and really, really cool. And... Yeah, so there was work, even for a guy who was probably not quite ready to start working. So I started making my living at it probably like at 22 or 23. Not
you made
a ton
a
of money.
Living.
Yeah, not a ton of money, but like, you know, $500-$600 a week for a guy who's 22 or 23. That's all I needed in life.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes. I remember Comedy Central back then was kind of like MTV was with videos.
Yeah.
They would do little shorts of comedians.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I was on Comedy Central quite a bit. A couple times, this is sort of a moment where I thought, hey, I'm doing okay at this when a couple people in the audience started finishing my bit for me because they used to play the yes. same bits on Comedy Central all the time. So that was kind of a kick, you know.
What a time.
Yeah, it was fun.
But Chicago wasn't it. Because if you were going to make it big, you had to go to L.A.
Yeah, that was what most people thought. And I have a lot of friends that stayed behind in Chicago and did really well.
Second Either City.
Second City, radio, or they still get parts in movies because they're respected actors in Chicago. So I think you can do it from Chicago. But I remember thinking in my 20s, and a lot of my friends had the same thinking, you have to go to L.A. or New York. A lot of my friends went to L.A. My wife wanted to go to L.A. of the two. So we did it, and it was really fun. I mean, it was weird when we first got there. It was kind of like, you know, I was mostly hanging out with comedians and just, you know. But when we had kids out there,
yeah,
it became a community. And I'm like, oh, this is just like anywhere else. Like, I have an issue when people say, well, the people here are the greatest people in the world.
The people here in Green Bay,
anywhere. Yeah, that's what people say because those are the people they know.
Yeah,
but
that's
people
true.
Mostly are the same. You'll find your people wherever you go.
But and the we people found them... in Northeast Wisconsin are kind of special.
Yes, they are. The ones in Kaukauna have an odor issue, but other than that, yeah. No, the people here are amazing.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't live here if they weren't. So, but my point is, I guess, I've liked everywhere I've lived. You know?
Yeah. But it is different in Los Angeles because it's huge.
Yeah.
And here people, again, have been here for generations. Their families have been here for generations.
Right.
So you kind of know what you're going to get. There's not a lot of change. There, it's a lot of change. People coming, people going, industries, you know, it's just different. A lot of people don't raise kids in big cities like that.
True, I suppose. But we were around a lot of people that did. And I grew up in the city of Chicago, like not in the burbs. So I mean, it's like neighborhoods in big cities, at least in Chicago, are a lot like small towns.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times people don't really leave that neighborhood. They don't take advantage of the theater district downtown
yeah.
or go to sporting events or whatever, which puzzled me. But yeah, you find your people wherever you go.
That's a really good perspective, though, because I think for those of us who have grown up in smaller towns like this, we don't think about the neighborhoods and how they are towns in themselves.
They are. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely.
Okay. I have this great idea.
Okay.
For when we come back after this little break.
Oh, thank God you're having me back.
We get to spend the whole hour together. This is so different than doing your show because we get to, like, we're going to dig deep.
But I always say you could stay as long as you want on my show. Even if I have a guest, you're, like, just easy to have around and we could both, you know, kind of talk. But I'm game for whatever.
Are you?
Oh, I think.
Okay, because
Just keep it PG-13. Doctor.
Okay.
No, you do whatever you want. You're the host. I'm here to help.
Okay.
All right.
When we come back from this break, I've got a throwback for you and for Pete. We're going to try to keep you in your seat.
I got to run.
This is Dr. Kristen Lierley. This is the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show on WGBW and WISS and streaming on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home for Matt Nair on air.
Are you ever questioning when life will slow down? Are you ever thinking of just relaxing and enjoying the simple things? All of this is possible, even while still being in the workforce. Worthington, Minnesota is a town growing, yet it's nothing like metro life. Professional and labor jobs, a beautiful lake, bike trails, recreation, acres of public hunting, festivals, and great people. Slow down. We're just a short drive away. So come join us. Worthington, it's worth a look.
Hey, it's Amanda, and we all know that Northeast Wisconsin has some of the best events around, but trying to find them all can be tricky. So here at WGBW, we decided to do the work for you. Prevent boredom on any night by going to WGBW.fm and click events in the top right corner. You'll never have to spend forever scrolling to find out what's going on in your area. And if you got an event to share, hit us up by emailing info@WGBW.fm. We can work together to have real news and great conversation while giving you the 411 on what's happening in New Wisco.
In sitcoms, when someone has a problem, they just blurt it out and move on.
Well, I lost my job and my parakeet is missing. How was your day?
But the real world is different. Managing life's challenges can be overwhelming. So, what do? We get support. The Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council have mental health resources available for you at loveyourmindtoday.org. That's loveyourmindtoday.org. See how much further you can go when you take care of your mental health.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
Ken, as I like to call him, my least favorite Martin,
chairman of the Democratic National Committee.
The other night I said to myself for the first time, I don't know if I want to do this anymore.
Matt Flynn.
You go into combat and the general goes, I'm afraid. He reminds me of the coach of the Jets back in the 90s. The other team would come on the field and say, boy, they look big. No, I swear to God. And the Jets lost 12 games. I mean, right. You can't have this kind of stuff. Get this guy out of here. Put in Ben Wickler.
The Todd Allbaugh Show. Weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station. And on the app.
We are the National Park Foundation, and together with you, we're creating a future where every person, every generation, gets their chance at an unforgettable moment. Learn more at nationalparks.org/foundation.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Kristen Lierley, and my guest today is Pete Schwabba, host of Nightlight with Pete Schwabba right here on Civic Media, and also producer, writer, director, actor. He was not the godfather of Green Bay, but he is the godfather
of Green Bay. And I do nails. A lot of people don't know that about me. Not feet, though.
Not feet. And the reason I played Macarena is because that's a huge part of that delightful movie.
We beat that joke into the ground. And to me, that's the kind of humor I like. I had an agent at the time when I was with William Morris, and I showed him part of the movie. The Macarena thing was completely lost on him.
Really?
And he goes, he's just sitting there watching. He goes, that must be a Midwest thing. It's just an idiot who likes a song, and it's like his song. You don't get that? But I thought it was hilarious. Yeah, when we licensed it, and we used it, and we overused it for our own joy. And, I will say this, Kristen. It's funny, because when I shot that movie in Marinette, we did 19 days in Marinette, then we did a few days in Vegas and in L.A. I never thought I would live here again.
I don't know, Pete, because watching the movie, and I rewatched it earlier today, it is a love story.
Yeah.
The cinematography, when you're in LA, it's beautiful, and then you're driving through Vegas and all the scenery, yeah. And then you get to Marinette and it's different.
Right.
Because it's the autumn colors, and you can tell that as you were creating this film that you were doing it out of love.
I missed the Midwest a lot. And I was just recently telling a friend of mine, like, when I lived in L.A., I had all these Charles Peterson paintings around my apartment or our house. And it was like, he's a Door County artist and he paints these great, there's like images that look like ghosts in the paintings, but he captures fall beautifully. And now when I'm here and I miss kind of Southern California, I had different. So, but when I was in L.A., I really missed fall and I missed the Midwest terribly. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that doesn't surprise me that that kind of popped off the screen that you noticed that. So it was fun. Yeah.
Hey, another thing about this, and it was the beginning, really, of that part of your career. It has this. It's 20 years old now.
Yeah, I know.
Sorry,
it's insane. I know. It's. I can't believe. Yeah.
But it has this lasting quality to it, and I think if you have some sort of a relationship with this part of the country, as you're watching it, as I was watching it. I just felt so drawn to it. It has this almost like a cult sensation.
Okay.
Like we could do this every deer hunting season at the Tarleton where people come together and they get up and they do the Macarena. This is what I was envisioning as I was watching it.
Yes. Wow, that's impressive. If you could get Tarl on board, he doesn't return my emails. So if you can get him on.
I just saw him outside.
I'm just kidding. Great guy. Half kidding. But it was great. It was fun to film. And I didn't realize how many people, like you said, LA is full of people from other places and, mm-hmm. and a lot of people from there too, but like that missed fall too. So the people that came to the movie, people that were in the cast or friends of the cast, Nia Vardalos was at one of our screenings because I cast Tracy Thorpe, who was a friend of hers. And Tracy played Janice, who's in the booth, and she and Tom Lennon do a shot, and
so
I start
funny.
Making out.
Yeah.
You know, it's like bar time, you know. And
I love the pacing of that shot too, because it's just you have to earn it.
It takes forever.
It does, but it's so great. Good when it happens.
So she was like, "Oh my God, I love this movie," and she told me this is where my eyes glassed over. She's like, "I was calling Tom Hanks during the credits and telling him all about this movie." She drove it to his partner, Gary Getzman, at Playtone in L.A. and sat with him and watched it so he would not take phone calls.
You're kidding.
And they were big fans. I think we already had a distribution deal or something, so they couldn't, you know, there wasn't as much in it for them. Mm-hmm. But they still helped us organize the screening. And it was just a great experience top to bottom, from writing the script, which was very personal. And I wrote the script because I was in a VH1 pilot. I got cast as a VJ. And Jim Gaffigan was the other. He was the producer. And Jim called me like 2 weeks later, and I said, "What, is the show canceled already?" And he goes, "Yeah, it is." And no. I didn't know. I was like, I was just depressed, and I didn't realize that happens all the time. I had just moved to L.A., mm-hmm. and I thought it was easy, you know, and all that stuff. So I sat down and wrote this movie, kind of as therapy. Mm-hmm. And a friend of mine, Brian Edding, said, "Why don't you find, like, you know, 12 people with 25 grand and let's go make this thing?" Mm-hmm. Because I had sold a couple films and they were taking forever. And the writers, you know, you get paid, but then they kind of tell you to go away nicely. But you're not really involved in the process. So I thought, you know, my writing partner at the time, Greg Liana, had created the Meet the Parents franchise and made his own movie. And I thought, you know, I'm going to do that. I want to direct this and I want to control the comedy in it. And so that's kind of what I did. And it was really fun.
How do you get to be that person, though, who pulls all the levers? I mean, I could see if you were a big star and you said, "I want to be a director and I want to also do these things." But you were coming from the other. I mean, you were just getting your start, really.
Well, I'd been doing stand-up for, probably 10 years. And then, you know, like I said, we had sold a couple movies to studios, which was great. But a part of it was Greg said, "You can direct. It's just, you just say what you want." And it's like, you surround yourself with good people. And I was at least smart enough to do that because I didn't know anything about directing. And I was acting, which was a lot to bite off. But, you know, we couldn't afford John Cusack or somebody to play the lead. So I just thought, all right, let's see what happens here. And it was fun. It was a great, great time.
There's that moment where you're like, "I could be the handsome lead in my movie."
There were those moments, but then a couple times I almost bailed and the producer's like, "You are playing the lead. It's too late to find someone else. And it was pretty scary, but it was an amazing experience.
Lauren Holly is stunning and wonder. Yeah, right.
She's all right.
You had some special moments with her.
We did. She was amazing. She was fun and kind of helped me through the whole process. And she was great. I don't have anything bad to say about her on the radio. No, I'm just kidding. She's amazing. Loved Lauren. She was great. Lots
Can we talk
fun.
More about
yeah,
this when we come back after the break?
What do you think open book means, Kristen?
Yes. Means what we're doing and exactly. more. Okay. We're going to hit the and more when we come back.
Oh boy. Now I'm scared. Conrad, help.
This is Dr. Kristen Lyerly at the Dr. Kristen Lyerly Show with Pete Schwabba on WGBW and WISS.
The Talk of Green Bay, WGBW. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. President Trump rejected an Israeli plan in recent days to kill Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, say two U.S. officials to ABC News. When asked about the story, first reported by Reuters, Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu would not say anything about it. More air attacks between Israel and Iran for a third day. 15% of the Iranian missiles are getting through Israeli-U.S. air defenses, says Israeli's ambassador to the U.S. Reaction from retired U.S. General Joseph Votel.
Iran is counting on that and hoping that that will put pressure on the Israeli administration to stop doing what they're doing.
Law enforcement officers searching an area in Sibley County outside Minneapolis for the suspected shooter of Minnesota lawmakers, sources say. They found a vehicle and personal items that may be connected. One person's dead, at least 11 others wounded by gunfire in a neighborhood overnight, say police in Elkhart, Indiana. This is ABC News.
The Brewers closed their homestand. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers wrapping up their longest homestand of the season when they complete their four-game series against the Cardinals today. Milwaukee losing 8-5 last night. It was a rough day for Brewers lefty Jose Quintana, who gave up 7 runs before being sent to the showers early in the fifth. Now, Quintana had missed some time earlier with a sore left shoulder, manager Pat Murphy.
Quintana's a veteran. I don't know how many years he's been pitching in big leagues. 12?
14.
14 years in the big leagues pitching. He's a pro. I trust him. You know, didn't have his best stuff today. He isn't on it last couple outings. He'd be the first to tell you he didn't have his great stuff today and didn't have his location.
Murph, since Quintana came back, have you seen a little less sharpness?
Yeah.
And stuff?
Yeah, for sure. Hasn't been as sharp. Hasn't located the ball the way he needs to, for sure.
The Brewers will have tomorrow off, then face the Cubs Tuesday night in Chicago. Cubs beat the Pirates yesterday 2-1. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Alan Ritchson has played Reacher for 3 seasons now, and season 4 is currently in production. It's a good gig because there are 29 Reacher books, and each one equals 1 TV season, which could keep an actor working for quite a while. The role is iconic and based on the books by Lee Child. Ritchson says when he won the role, he was nervous about trying to fill the shoes of Tom Cruise, who played the character in the movies. Ritchson says he was really thrilled when he got the part, but recently said that he was even more excited when he realized the character Reacher in the book eventually has thinning hair. Richson says he erupted in cheers when he read that because there is no pressure now to not go bald, which for a guy can be a challenge over the course of 29 TV seasons. Great show. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price on this Father's Day. Plentiful cloud cover out there with showers here and there and even some rumbles of thunder, too. High temperatures warming to the lower 70s. Our winds on the light side. Tonight, showers and storms, mostly cloudy skies, lows in the lower 60s. Currently 62 degrees.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Mark Sommerhauser, the communications director for the Wisconsin Policy Forum, analyzing the impacts of the big brutal bill.
That number that you mentioned of nearly $15,000 per person, literally about a quarter of the state's economy.
Basically a quarter of the state's economy coming from the federal government. I'm not hearing from Republicans in the state in their biennial budget planning any sort of contingency plan for major disruption in federal funding coming into the state.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Mino and the Mayor.
On Monday, Civic Media meteorologist Brittany Merlot has the week's forecast.
And David Rucker from Bank First joins us from our Oshkosh studios. Join us.
Mino and the Mayor, weekday morning, 6 till 9 on WISS, WGBW, and the Civic Media app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Sometimes at night I don't want to close my eyes, because I know I'll have to open them up in the morning. Sometimes I feel like this could be our last goodbye, because I know that life can end without a single warning. I feel so insecure.
Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I am Dr. Kristen Lierley. I'm here with Pete Schwabba from Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
It's good to be here. We're talking life. Great to be here. Yeah. We are talking life, and it's fun to be in the other. You know, like we said, you've been on my show a lot, so I'm. This is kind of fun.
Less pressure. You know, we were just talking about this. It's a little easier to be a guest because you just have to talk and answer questions.
I'm like a monkey boy here. I just say stuff. You just steer me wherever you want me to go.
It is harder to be. I use the analogy of like when you drive somewhere with your parents, and they're driving, and you're just riding.
Great analogy.
And then when they make you drive, you don't know where to go and you're lost.
It's funny you say that because when I was teaching my son to drive, he said the same thing. He said, Dad, this is like doing radio when you're the host and I watch you and I don't know what you're talking about, but I learned that way.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Boy, sure.
Now you know why I don't do stand-up anymore. That was a clunk. Man, I thought that was this brilliant thing I couldn't wait to get out of my mouth.
So anyway, hey, can we talk about the music? Because I always love to promote new local bands.
Oh, yeah.
And when I asked you if there was somebody that you really enjoyed, you immediately said, have you heard of 7,000 Apart?
They're great. They're local and, well, they're half local. They spend part of the year in Sweden and then part of the year here. And they're from like, is it John, I think, is from here. Uh-huh. And,
Amelie
is from Sweden. So they met in high school and did a long distance thing, that's truly long distance.
Well, she was an exchange student.
Right.
And they met at Preble.
Right.
And then COVID happened.
Right.
And so,
wait, did COVID, are they that young? Did this just happen? Like they went from making out in a car to COVID happening all of a sudden?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know it was that.
I don't think it was because of them though. Oh, I got it. Maybe I could do stand up.
You're saying they caused COVID. Interesting. I would be sure and run that by them. I'd love to see what their reaction to that is.
You know, they do a lot of their music acknowledges mental health and some of the struggles that they've been through. And I think COVID is a big piece of that, you know, recognizing that young people, we see more mental health issues now in the world than we did before, or at least it's more diagnosed, more appropriate to be treated, more appropriate to come forward and recognize.
I mean, you're
it.
The doctor. What do you think about that? Because I've noticed that with kids, they're so open, and kids, meaning like early 20s all the way down to high school or whatever, they're okay discussing mental health. It's in the conversation, which I think is great, you know?
It's so different.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'll share a little of my personal life. My dad died young. I was 11. He was 40 of alcoholism. And it was because, I am convinced, he was depressed and he had childhood trauma and he wouldn't seek help for it.
Wow.
Yeah. And I think we see that a lot. And for me personally, as the mom of four boys, I look at my boys and it makes me so sad. My dad really, really wanted a son that was really important to him. And I'm like, you couldn't get treatment because of the culture that you lived in. It wasn't acceptable for you, and it cost you your life. And you could know your four grandsons if we had been able to do that. So one of my missions in life is to make sure that men know that it's okay to not always be the guy, the strongest person in the room. Like, we are all human here.
Right.
And depression happens. Anxiety happens. Like, we have feelings.
I've always wanted to be a lesbian. But do you know how many hurdles I have to go over to get there?
A lot.
Yeah. But I drink a lot of water to deal with it. But that's interesting. Like what you said with your dad, do you think he knew that?
No.
See, that's sad too.
Yeah.
Actually, that's not as sad as if he did and willingly ended his life, so to speak. But it's sad that when people don't know that that's why they're doing something.
But that's part of the beauty of entertainment, right? It's art and music and film and acting and comedy are all outlets for us. And we can often share the things that we're feeling, which is really where your writing and your filmmaking came from. You were just telling your own story.
Right. Yeah, that's kind of true. And it's funny you equate that to entertainment. I just was driving up back home from Madison yesterday, and that's when I catch up with my comedy buddies, and I was talking to my friend Mike Siegel, and he said, we were talking about a mutual friend, and he said, we're all messed up. That's why we go into that. And there are different degrees of you know, craziness, but, you know, show business, entertainment, it's great therapy, whether you want to be an actor or a writer or just like to laugh and watch it. You know what I mean? Like, it's all there, you know?
Yeah.
So,
hey, and music.
For sure, music. Yeah. Maybe that's...
And how it fits together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you asking me to sing?
No, okay, but it does say like part-time crooner on your LinkedIn, which
oh
is
my God.
It needed to be updated about 5 years ago. Maybe
I know. I don't
longer.
Have my I don't have Nightlight on there.
No.
You know, my sister did that for me. I don't even know how to update my LinkedIn. I'm fairly, you know, social media savvy. I don't know. Does LinkedIn even count as
Conrad,
social media?
Are you like making a list of the things we need to do to get Pete to the next level here?
I don't know. He might be too far gone.
That's Conrad's way of saying, I'd rather not dip my toe in those waters.
All right. I wanted to ask you about Marinette.
Yeah.
Because you live there now. You never thought you'd come back.
Never.
There are some really amazing things about Marinette. One of them is something that I had no clue. And here's a comedy thing. You ready?
Okay. Yeah, I think so.
Okay. There is a comedy legend from Marinette. Her name was Mitzi Shore.
Yeah.
She was the person who, along with her husband, founded the
comedy store.
The comedy store in Los Angeles.
On Sunset, yeah.
And she was one of the people who really helped to develop comedians and launch this whole the comedy explosion.
Yeah. She was definitely part of it. And she was born in Marinette. Maybe Menominee, but she lived in Marinette till I think eighth grade.
Uh-huh.
Then Green Bay. I believe. And then she went to Madison, and that's where she met Howard Shore, who was a band director. So unfortunately, they had a child named Pauly Shore, who set comedy back decades. No, Pauly Shore is fine. But
did you know Pauly Shore?
I met him a couple times.
Nice. Did you make a Marinette connection?
No, I don't think Mitzi Shore's experience in Marinette was
as
positive.
Awesome as yours is.
Correct.
Uh-huh.
She was Jewish, and there were this is strange. I learned this. There were like six synagogues or temples in Marinette.
Interesting.
Back whenever it was when she was a kid. But I don't know that. I think there was some back and forth with religion. And I think that's why they left. That's what I've heard.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't bring that up. A friend of mine, John Borchers, his dad was from Marinette. And he moved to L.A. And he read this article about Mitzi Shore and saw that she was from Marinette. And he didn't finish the article, though. And he went to the comedy store and introduced himself and dropped the Marinette card. And she just stared at him and walked away.
Oh.
And then he went back and read the rest of the article. He's like, oh, no. So I didn't make that mistake. But, you know, I like to think people have evolved now. And Marinette is it's much more racially diverse than it was when I was there in junior high, which I think is great. And it's got its pluses and minuses, but overall, it's a very easy place to live. We have very good friends there, and it's very beautiful.
It is very beautiful.
Yeah.
There's another comedy legend from this area that I did not realize was from here. Yeah, I know. Charlie Hill.
Oh, I know that name. Yeah. Who is Charlie Hill again?
He's from the Oneida Nation.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. He was famous like back in the 70s, early 80s. Yeah. All wrapped up in the whole Comedy Store, that whole piece.
That's interesting. I know that just from Marinette alone, there's a guy named, what is his name? Charles, I don't know if it's Charles Goldberg was his last name. Arthur Goldberg changed his name to Arthur Gardner in World War II. Because his family was Jewish, and they owned a Goldberg's for men store. It was a suit store in Marinette.
Really?
And I think I got a prom tux there one year. It was probably a handsome rust brown color. But
that would really compliment your very pale skin tone.
I don't know why I listened to the guy. He had a tape measure. What am I supposed to do? I'm drinking a Mountain Dew. But he went and fought in World War II, and he and some of his buddies were charged with recording the war on video cameras. So they took their equipment and went to Hollywood, and he ended up producing shows like The Rifleman.
Oh, wow.
And F Troop. And I wish I had known this. I lived in LA for almost 15 years, and he was 2 miles away.
Really?
In Beverly Hills in a rest home. And my friend Mike McGuire, who's also from Marinette, moved out to LA kind of as I was leaving, but he tracked him down and got to talk to him. And he was like, how is good old Marinette? You know, it was just great. It was like, so there, yeah, Marinette has some really interesting connections to Hollywood, I guess, or show business. And I would say the town is mostly sports crazy.
Uh-huh.
But there's some really good entertainment connections there, too.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
It is. It's there's so much potential for more.
In Marinette?
Don't you think?
Yeah, I do.
Not just in Marinette, but like across Northeast Wisconsin. We're starting to see, you know, here in Green Bay, we've seen murals popping up. We're seeing music festivals.
Yeah.
There's a space for people who are interested in arts and entertainment.
I agree. And I'm not an outdoorsy guy. I'm an inside guy. Proud inside guy, I might add.
Back to the skin tone again. Yeah.
I played a little bit of baseball and football and hated both of them because it's so damn cold. I stuck with basketball, my worst sport, because it was inside in the winter. Stick with me. I've got a point here. I feel like with the arts, that's an inside thing. You could have a great theater company in Marinette. You could do amazing things all through Northeast Wisconsin.
Yes.
It's cold here.
Yes.
And it's not for everyone. Conrad, born and raised in Wisconsin his whole life, hates the cold.
Yeah, that is true. That
right.
is true.
Now, he's a phenomenal actor. I don't know if you've ever seen him do Shakespeare, but it's it's really something.
I did it in fourth grade.
So. Oh.
My point is, like, you could, I think a lot of great people have come from here and could support my argument, so to speak, that this could be a more cultural area in terms of music, like you said, theater, whatever. Get kids started early because, you know, we've got the tools.
Yeah. The opportunities just need to be there. And I think as a community, the more spaces we create, the people have the desire. So they will fill those spaces.
Yeah.
But we've got to continue to
create
those spaces.
Totally agree.
Okay. I want to go back to you being a stand-up comic again.
Okay.
Because as I was watching the movie, I was thinking, The Godfather of Green Bay, I was thinking, it must be really hard to get heckled. That's got to be really uncomfortable. Or maybe you love it because it's an opportunity to do something different and try something new out.
You know, if I remember correctly anyway, it was a standalone heckler's great because you can kind of take your time and wind up on them and really let them have it. But it's when the crowd is turned ugly, it's like, oh my God. Like my friend Paul Gilmartin used to use the phrase, he's like, it was so quiet in the room, you could hear a bead of sweat roll down my back. And those are the sets that are awful. And I remember I did one, I was on the south side of Chicago. I think it was called the TNT Comedy Hook. And as I was exiting the stage, it did not go well. And there was a group of young guys and one guy leaned over to his friend. I said, thanks a lot. Good night. And as I'm getting off the stage, I hear him lean over to his friend and go, finally. But that made me laugh. I'm like, look, I went up there and I chewed it for 20 minutes. It was awful. So I'm willing to acknowledge when I stink, you know.
Did you ever have a moment where you felt like I'm bad at this and I'm just not going to do this anymore? Or was it enough that you knew you were good and that was just a bad night?
I was... You know, I'd like to say I was good. I was a decent comedian. Yeah, I got on TV quite a bit and I got enough laughs where I thought, all right, I'm not delusional here. I can do this. You know, I wish I had stuck with it. Mm-hmm. I sold a comedy script to MGM, and I was like, well, this is a lot better than working, you know, Grand Rapids in the middle of winter. So I should have kind of kept going with stand-up a little bit too, I think, sometimes. Not a huge regret, but, and I still do it periodically, but.
And you transition to, you know, some other good stuff that we'll talk about when we come back from the break.
I'm in.
All right. This is Kristen Lierley, and you're listening to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. In discussions over the so-called Big Beautiful Bill, backed by Donald Trump, that's making its way through Congress, none other than Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson has emerged as the most prominent Republican critic of the bill, saying at a recent Milwaukee Press Club event that it is, quote, not even close to adequate. Johnson has said he wants spending cuts to go even further, including making cuts to Medicaid. But Johnson's position as a critic of this bill makes him especially influential in these negotiations. But let's not forget the last time he was in a similar position. In 2017, he was a critic of the Trump tax cut bill, but what he fought for was a tax break for certain types of businesses, perhaps not coincidentally, businesses owned by his largest donors, Dick and Liz Uline. In 2018 alone, the Ulines received more than $200 million in tax breaks because of this bill. So as the Big Beautiful Bill is negotiated in the Senate, let's not forget this piece of recent history.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government buy-in for the people. Tarrant County, Texas County Commissioners approved a new county redistricting map June 3rd, diluting the votes of Black and Hispanic voters. But commissioners claim the gerrymandering was for political, not racial reasons. The map likely eliminates a majority-minority district and has drawn widespread condemnation and a Voting Rights Act lawsuit. County Commissioners and Senior County Official Judge Tim O'Hare brought in the Conservative Public Interest Legal Foundation and the National Republican Redistricting Trust to draw the map, according to reporting by Democracy Docket. Their efforts apparently manipulated the districts to gain another GOP County Commission seat and a 4-to-1 advantage. Analysis by the UCLA Voting Rights Project and Southern Methodist University found the approved map packed District 2 Black and Hispanic voters into District 1, reducing the chance a Black or Hispanic candidate would be elected in District 2. Because the county staggers election cycles for different districts, it also disenfranchised as many as 150,000 voters, heavily Black and Hispanic, who can't vote in their current district's 2026 election and must wait until 2028. Voters sued under the VRA and the 14th and 15th Amendments. The commissioners claim that they gerrymandered for political advantage, to which the Supreme Court turns a blind eye, and not racial discrimination. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Here's to experiencing it all this summer in Wisconsin. Every deliciously cheesy, rockin', magical, fireworks-filled, festival-loving moment. There's Cheese Curd Fest in Ellsworth, Strawberry Fest in Cedarburg, Festival of the Arts in Stevens Point, and the Renaissance Fair in Bristol, Honor the Earth Powwow in Hayward, Mile of Music in Appleton, Venetian Fest, Bratfest, Summerfest. So many fests for your whole crew. Find them all at TravelWisconsin.com. Sponsored by Travel Wisconsin.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Did you know this wouldn't last? Already broke. Do we go up in smoke? Am I a burnout cigarette that you won't light up again?
Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. It's me, Dr. Kristen Lierley, with Pete Schwabba from Nightlight.
Hello, everybody. Great to be here. I'm waving like it's television. It's not. It's just a
hey!
Little. And you're wearing in honor of Bike Week?
It's Bike Week.
Okay.
And yeah, we're taping in early June, so yeah. It's Bike Week.
You've got your bike attire on, as do I. This is what I ride in. I left the snow pants at home.
You have to get one of those fat tire bikes, because then you can ride anytime, anywhere.
That looks really difficult to do.
It's fun. It's bouncy.
I have a car, so I sort of circumvent the whole bike thing altogether.
Oh,
but I'm
car.
Doing a 5K with my car, which will be fun.
You know, it's great.
It's a Honda. It's nothing fancy.
Welcome back to Health Talk with Pete Schwabba.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Are you smarter than a fifth grader?
Oh, man. Barely.
So you were perfect for that show.
Yeah, and I wasn't on that show for very long. I did like a month, but it was fun to work with Jeff Foxworthy. He was a good guy, and some of the other writers I really liked. But that operation was not, like, I had done this other horrible show called Bandits versus Smokies for the same producers. And it was like, we just did voices, and they got clips, and it was on, I think, CMT, and they got clips of car chases, and we would add voices. And, you know, it was one of those things where, like, oh, I got a really funny thing here, and you do it. And the producer would be like, oh, no, 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 I got this one. We would just use whatever he did. And I didn't even get it. I'm like, oh, that's great. Yeah, let's use that one. I didn't know what the hell he was talking about. So anyway, they took over a fifth grader, and I did that show for like a month, maybe. I wasn't on it long. It was fun. And they were good guys. You know, the producers were fine. And but I just felt lost. By the time I felt like I was getting the hang of it, it was the other guy came back. I think he went on maternity leave or something like that. So I was just filling in. But it was a fun gig. All those gigs are fun because you take something from them, either a great story or great relationships. So, yeah, I had great experiences. It was all fun.
What was the funnest show? Is funnest a word? What was the funnest show to work on?
The only full-time writing gig I had in my adult life, really, because mostly I did screenplays, but it was a show called Sports Soup. Mm-hmm. And it was by the same producers. My buddy KP Anderson was the executive producer, and he was the executive producer for The Soup with Joel McHale. And this was just Sports Soup. So I...
You were talking about sports?
Yeah, I was. And I know a few things.
You do?
I do. Yeah, I'm a sports fan.
You know
fan.
That it's cold in Marinette, so you don't want to play.
Exactly. Inside, I'm fine. You know, it's 70 and sunny in the gymnasium. So, and I was, you know, led the layup line. I've got some good memories. But yeah, it was a blast. It was me and four other people sitting in a room.
Kind of doing what we're doing right now.
Yes. But messing
sports.
With each other all day. And then making fun of each other, playing jokes. And then we would actually do some writing at times too. And Matt Eisman was the host. He was great. And now he's on American Ninja Warrior. He's been on Nightlight a couple times. So, yeah, I had great relationships. The writers, though, were my favorite. I still keep in touch with those guys. They're great dudes, and we had a lot of fun.
How do you maintain those relationships? Because you've met a lot of people along the way. Just watching The Godfather of Green Bay, my son walked through the room, and he goes, Reno 911?
Yeah.
So now my status has been elevated. I said, Lindsay, remember we went to Pete's show and you sat in the corner and you didn't want to talk?
I remember.
I'm like,
sure.
This is Pete's show. And he's like, oh.
Yeah.
So now you are here. You were here, but now you're here in Lindsay's mind.
That's tell him I said hello.
But all those relationships, you've
social
met so
media.
Many people. Yeah.
Honestly, I mean, I was pretty good at keeping in touch with people before that, but social media, to me, that's the best thing about it. Like, I still feel connected with comedy friends or other writers that I've met or actors. That's the great thing about social media to me. And it's fun because doing the show, doing Nightlight, I've had a lot of these people. You know, Tom Lennon was on a few months ago, and my buddy Lance Barber, who was also in Godfather of Green Bay. And so it's just, it makes it easier to keep in touch with those guys doing the show. I get to talk to them on the show. And then we always say, we got to call and catch up. And then the minute they're off the show, we never talk again until, but that's okay.
Yeah.
You still feel like they're in your life to a degree, you know?
Right. And you pick up right where you left off.
Absolutely. And that's the magical thing about relationships and connections you have with people. And I truly believe in connecting with people. Like, you meet people your whole life. And it's a miracle when you have this connection, this instant connection with people. And the bar in The Godfather of Green Bay was called Connections. Like, it also sounds like a pickup joint, you know, but...
Wait, the bar where you actually filmed?
Well, we called it Connections. I named it Connections because I feel like that's like the best part of life is just connecting with people that make you feel like, oh, this is great that we're all here, you know?
Yeah. There's substance to that.
Oh, for sure.
Which is probably pretty different than how much of LA is. Lots of glitter, not a lot of substance.
I mean, it depends where you go. There's people that lived three blocks from us that lived their whole life in the San Fernando Valley, Studio City, North Hollywood. And they're like, so you part of that whole Hollywood scene? Like, they might as well be in the middle of Wisconsin. Like, so you have the showbiz element. Then you have people that, the guys that produced The Godfather of Green Bay were the most regular dudes. And they were just San Fernando Valley guys. And, you know, so it also taught me you really can't judge people, you know. You just don't know. There's there's good people everywhere that you can connect with.
It is very true. Yeah. Okay, so other than starting up the cult showing of The Godfather of Green Bay every fall at the Tarleton, we'll talk to Tarl.
All right.
What's next? What's on the horizon for Peach Schwabe? You've got Nightlight. You've got the PBS gig.
Yeah. I really love doing Nightlight, and it's a great distraction because when you try to get projects going, you've got a half-hour TV project with a really big producer who's really busy. Yeah. So I'm kind of waiting for him, but it's good to have him involved. It'll make things easier. I don't have an agent anymore. Got a film in the works that I'm trying to shoot at some point, you know, and if I'm still doing Nightlight, I just won't direct it, I guess, if it works out, because I really do like doing the show. And I hope I can keep it going. But yeah, you got to stay busy and you got to set yourself up in case one thing doesn't work out. You always have to have something on the back burner when you're self-employed. That's just the way.
That's right.
It's a heck of a life.
And when can people hear Nightlight?
6 to 8 every weeknight here on the Civic Media Radio Network, the app, the stream. We're all over the place. Find us, please, and join the show. Text us, call us. We love interacting with people.
That's one of my favorite things is you really do respond to the texters. You take their questions. That is a big part of the show. So it just feels like you're having a conversation with somebody.
I try not to miss one text. The listeners make it fun.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next week. This is the Dr. So Kristen Lierley Show.
This is 97.9 WGBW Denmark, Green Bay's real news and great conversation, a Civic Media radio station.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. President Trump rejected an Israeli plan in recent days to kill Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, say two U.S. officials to ABC News. 15% of the Iranian missiles are getting through Israeli-U.S. air defenses, says Israel's ambassador to the U.S., Michael Leiter, on Israel's intent.
The idea is to neutralize and terminate the Iranian intention of destroying Israel through nuclear weapons and through ballistic missiles. And anybody who gets in the way of that or who is actually advancing that cause of destroying Israel is obviously somebody we're going to have to deal with.
Law enforcement officers searching an area in Sibley County outside Minneapolis for the suspected shooter of Minnesota lawmakers, sources say. They found a vehicle and personal items that may be connected. One person's dead, at least 11 others wounded by gunfire in a neighborhood overnight, say police in Elkhart, Indiana. This is ABC News.